Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast.
Hello, everybody, and thanks so much for joining the KevCast. I'm so glad you came back for another episode. So glad you're here. Thanks for telling your friends. Thanks for tuning in. I know it takes a little bit of your time, and it certainly takes a little bit of your mental energy in order to engage into these ideas and these conversations. But I trust that it's beneficial to you. I trust that it's making you into a better person. I mean, it's not easy to give your time and energy to these kind of deep contemplative thoughts, but it's so necessary and it's so beneficial in our life and world today. Today, we're going to talk about a question that you may immediately want to dismiss, but I hope you don't. The question is, what is sin? What is sin? And you probably already have an answer for that. But I want you to really kind of tune into something different today. I mean, if we ask the average person this question, most people are going to answer that sin is the bad thing we do. I mean, stealing's a sin. Adultery is a sin. Murder definitely makes the list. And, you know, oh yeah, isn't there a list of deadly sins somewhere? Incidentally, Proverbs 6:16 has the list of seven. And, you know, did you know that every single religion talks about sin? You know, but the idea of sin as wrongdoing goes certainly well beyond religion. I mean, when we play sports, when we drive our cars, when we go to school, go to work, we all follow a certain set of rules that pertain to that organization. And these are the rules of fair play. And breaking these rules of fair play diminishes our humanity. And it diminishes the quality of engagement that we can have. And so therefore, the concept of sin is universally understood, at least in the wrongdoing category. But behind sin is the assumption that people ought to behave in a certain way, but they don't. Right? We all know that, hey man, wouldn't it be great if we go out in life and there were no rules? You wouldn't have to have locks on anything because nobody would take it. Nobody would take something that wasn't theirs, right? We assume people should behave a certain way, but we know they don't. See, and when we start talking about oughts, and we start talking about the shoulds, we enter a discussion where we cross over into ethics. And this is an area where science cannot really go. And this is an important idea, because every single person, even the most scientific person, has ethics. Every single person has morality. Now, in religion, sin is always a violation of the playbook, right? That set of rules of fair play. In Hinduism, it's the Dharma. In Islam, it's the Quran. In Judaism, it's the Torah. In Christianity, it's the Bible. You see, atheists hold to morality also. It's not like atheists, because they don't believe in any of these organized religions, don't subscribe to some morality. They most certainly do. And while they may not use the term sin, they recognize and live according to a standard of right and wrong, which is actually relative to the individual and not to a playbook. So each atheist then decides for themselves what is right and what is wrong. And so while you can have a book that says adultery is wrong, like one of the Ten Commandments, an atheist who doesn't subscribe to that kind of book or authority might say, why is adultery wrong? It's not illegal, so how can it be wrong? They might change the rules on murder. Hey, murder is wrong in most cases, but you know, if it's a little baby, then it hasn't had a chance to be born, then maybe that's okay. Maybe they won't see that as murder. Right. And this is not just a jab at atheism at all. This is simply saying that when you don't have that standard to appeal, then you have to appeal to the individual. And that's where relativism comes from. But beyond that, on the topic of sin or wrongdoing, if we want to put it that way, all systems understand sin. And all these systems have a plan for dealing with sin. And see, the majority, I mean, this is not just the majority of people, but the majority of religions, they view sin as a mistake. And they believe that God really isn't concerned with small mistakes, boo-boos, you know. And most religions teach that wrongdoing is overcome by good deeds. And there's this system of balance. You know, you use rituals, you use prayers, austerities, mantras. You know, all these types of religious behavior, they surround and they define the purification process. That's what religion does. And it's all designed to move us away from sin and into a better place. And even atheists who don't subscribe to those kinds of systems believe that they must do better in the future and move on from previous mistakes or failures. So there's this sense of growth and maturity and getting beyond that kind of thing and passing on that information to others. And so in the same sense, this is really an aspect of humanity more than it is an aspect of religion. And that's really my point by separating out the different religious perspectives alongside of atheism, who would usually not subscribe to such a perspective. And I do that because so much of my audience defines themselves in this uncertain category. They won't subscribe to any particular religion. They would say, I'm spiritual, but I'm not religious. They might say, I'm kind of agnostic. I really don't know what to believe, and I don't really want to sign up for a religion, but I'm interested in this kind of discussion. And so it's good to know where we're drawing our ethics from. Now, Christians think that they know sin better than everybody else. And I think this is in part due because of modern Christianity. You see, modern Christianity over the last couple hundred years has really capitalized on what I call a sin management system. And I didn't coin that term. I've heard that elsewhere. But the storyline is that, you know, a punishment for sin had to be paid, and so God sent his son Jesus to die for the sins of humanity. I don't have a problem with that storyline in its essence or its raw form. But what the modern church has done is really leveraged that storyline into a personal transaction system. And that transaction determines that while everybody is a sinner, only the believers are forgiven, right? At least until they sin again. In which case, when you do sin again, you have to go back through their process of, you know, pleading with God to forgive you and accepting God's forgiveness and then going on, learning from your mistakes. And in some ways, it's not that different than what the atheist is doing or some of the others are doing. I kind of call this a shampoo Christianity because it's basically sin, wash, repeat, sin, wash, repeat. But what if there's something a little bigger? What if it's way bigger? What if it's way better than these alternatives of just having the good outweigh the bad or having a sin management system of sin, wash, and repeat? What if there's something beyond that? And that's what this whole blog, these podcasts are all about. It's to help you see beyond everything. You see, my PhD is in ethics, and it was on the subject of sin, or hamartiology. And in it, I ultimately prove that sin is the design of love. Now, that might just be a clinker for you. That might be one of those, Kev, I don't get it. Now your cheese has really slid off the cracker, right? I'm trying to convince you, like I convinced my thesis committee, that sin is not merely an external thing we do. It's not just wrongdoing, right? Sin is the negative space given off by our positive humanity. That's going to take a little time for you to kind of decode that, and I hope to help you out here, but just think on this. In short, sin is simply non-faith. Romans 14 says that whatever is not of faith is sin, and that's where I get this definition. Sin is the opposite of faith. And how does that make sense? After I give you these examples, this is really going to become clear. But think of it like this. Cold doesn't really exist. Now, you might disagree with me when you go outside in the middle of winter and you're freezing. It's not that cold doesn't exist. What we know as cold exists. But in reality, cold doesn't exist. It only exists because there's something called heat. And heat can actually be measured. Heat is the movement of electrons and the expansion of them. And that actually exists and can be measured. And cold is simply a diminished amount of heat or non-heat. You see, air conditioners and refrigerators and freezers, they don't add cold into the box or into your house. What they do is they pull heat out of the fridge or out of your house. And so this is how I can say cold doesn't really exist. It's simply non-heat. It's the same thing for light. Darkness doesn't really exist. Darkness is non-light. We can measure light. It exists. It's palpable, it's tangible, it's scientifically empirical, improvable, right? But we can't add darkness to a room, but we can take away light. So darkness is non-light. Cold is non-heat. This is how we get at this. Badness is non-goodness. And now we can understand sin from a different light. So sin, when I say, is really just the negative space given off by our positive humanity, you kind of understand what I'm saying. Sin is the opposite of faith. So sin doesn't really exist except for the reality of faith. And if we agree that all sin, right, as we've proven already in this discussion, all religions and non-religions and atheists and everybody agrees, even on the playing field of our kids' soccer game, that there is this wrongdoing side of things. If that all exists, then we have to examine the reality, the greater reality, that we are all people of faith. And the teachings of Jesus move us beyond the external rules. And unfortunately, sin is not corrected with good deeds. And so the religions that focus on a balance system are kind of missing something here. They get at it, but they get at it on a tangential, kind of deferred way. They're not really touching it. They're more on the surface. You see, the Bible teaches that we can do the right thing. And if we do that right thing in the wrong way, then it's sin, like in Luke chapter 18, verses 11 through 14, where you have this very proud Pharisee giving this arrogant prayer, right? He's doing the right thing. He's praying, but he's doing it in the wrong way, and it's seen as a sin, right? You could also do the wrong thing the right way, and it's not a sin. Like you'd see in 1 John 5:17. It's basically saying there is sin that doesn't lead to death. Right? He's saying all sin leads to death. All sin is death. He said, but there is sin that doesn't lead to death. And there it is again. And so what this is all saying, if you're following me, is that sin is really an inside job. It's not this external thing of rule breaking. See, the rule breaking doesn't make us a bad person. That's what the world kind of teaches. That's what our schools teach us. That's what, you know, you get put on the naughty chair or timeout corner or whatever, detention, because you did the wrong thing. You're a bad person now. And that's kind of the external surface. That's the byproduct of what I was telling you about. It doesn't really work. The rule breaking doesn't make us bad. Instead, it's the bad, it's the non-faith that's in us that makes us break the rules. And this is, again, the perspective that Jesus is trying to shed into a landscape much like our own, where everything is kind of externalized. He's saying that that thing that defiles you, that makes you bad, is not the thing on the outside that you're trying to warn everybody about. The thing that defiles you is that thing on the inside. It's called your heart. Right? That's in Mark 7:21. You can read about it also in Paul's diatribe about this in Romans 7:13. You see, external solutions cannot fix an internal problem. The external solutions or the they can only expose the problem. Right? The rules expose the problem. The fact that the speed limit is 55 exposes the fact that I'm going 70. Without the speed limit, there's no way to know I'm going too fast. See how this works? I know that this is a difficult subject to get your head around if you're not used to thinking in this kind of abstract space. But this is what spirituality does. It allows us to look at the world and see beyond it into the thing that's behind it. And from there, we gain new perspectives, which are actually transformative. Now, after a year, you know, this, I'll get to that in a minute, but let's just start here with the solution to faith. I mean, the solution to sin, like I said, is not a system of the good outweighing the bad. The solution then is faith. It's not belief. So the solution to sin is faith, not belief. Now, religion tries to equate faith and belief as the same thing, or they put them so closely together that if you believe something, you have to do something. And they are related. So if you're a Muslim, then you have to believe Muhammad is the true and final prophet of God and follow the five pillars of Islam. If you are a Christian, then you have to believe Jesus is the Son of God and that he died for your sins. And then you have to follow the Bible. If you're a Hindu or a Buddhist, then you have to believe that all is Maya, illusion, and follow the Dharma, right? The law, the teaching. You know, a good Jew is going to follow the Torah. See, the solution is faith, not belief. And see, each one of these frameworks, each one of these religions, gives you something to do about what you believe. But faith goes beyond the institutional framework, because it too is an inside job, just like sin. And in the same way that the sin is not that thing on the outside trying to come in, the solution is not the religion or the framework that works from the outside in as well. The solution is the faith that works from the inside out. That's the teaching of Jesus. That's why Christianity, if you really examine it, is not an alternative religion as it's been turned into. It was never intended to be an alternative religion. It was intended to be the completer of all religions, that thing that made all religions completely satisfied. See, Jesus' followers and original disciples, he didn't tell them to stop becoming Jews. Many of them still practice Judaism. It was that Christianity completed Judaism in the area that it needed that completion. And it was archetypical for what would be all religions. Now, that might be a very big side tangent step for you to take in at this point. I'll leave it for there. Back to our discussion on sin. After a year of debate, my thesis committee finally accepted my proof that God is the architect of sin. Now I pause there because some of you, it clinked again. What are you saying, Kevin? God is the architect of sin? Again, go back to the definition that I provided. Is God the architect of light? And if so, then darkness is the byproduct of that light, because darkness doesn't ultimately exist. But there is the division between those, and you see that in the creation story. He makes the light, and then he knows by default there's a line where darkness begins. So God is the architect of sin. And there is really great beauty in a design where the infinite is placed to dwell in the limited. This is the whole point. See, our broken vessel of our humanity is depicted in 2 Corinthians. We carry this great treasure in this earthen pot, this clay vessel. Right? It's not that the beauty and holiness of God is so other than our humanity that we have to escape our humanity and actually to apprehend it. If that were the case, there would never be the Jesus story where God became a man. I mean, that was unfathomable back in, you know, the days of Plato and Greek mythology. God was too high up and too perfect to ever take on the stain of humanity. And here we have in the Christian story this radical idea that God dwells in humanity. If he can do it in Jesus, the idea is that obviously she can do it in us. And it's depicted well in the Jesus story. The maker best displays light by shadow. Every artist knows this. When you're creating something of beauty and depth, light and darkness are the interplay that make it beautiful. Right? Thus, the sin of the world is the work of love, because it's a benevolent reminder, making it impossible to go through life and miss God and miss our purpose. Think about that for a minute. Sin makes it impossible for you to go through life and miss God. Faith is the non-dual ability to see light and not only shadow. So sin is the all I see is shadow mindset. And the moment that you realize that the shadow is only created because of something of the oblique angle of the light, then when you see the light, you understand the shadow. And so when we look at our world and we see all the sin and the pain and the suffering because of all the sin, we recognize we have a purpose. We all want bad things to go away. And we're all trying in our own best way to find our way. We're all going after good things. Sin isn't the bad thing you do. It's the going after the good thing in the bad way. And sin remains in this world, not because there's no God. Sin remains in the world because God is infinitely more glorified by our struggle with sin than its removal. And you know as well as I do, and I've had this talk with many Christians who want to believe their sin is removed as far as the east is from the west. They know it's not. Their sin is right there with them, despite their faith. So the sin is still there, but they believe it's been covered. It doesn't count against them, and that's the key. God is more glorified by our struggle with sin than the removal of it. That's why it's still here. So that should all give us a moment of pause. And hopefully, if I'm successful today, that gave you a sense of peace and liberty in our humanity.
Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.